This is Mae Brussel, and it is the second half of a program called World Watchers, in case you picked it up in the middle of the first half. It is the second half of the broadcast, number 748. Now, I want to go on to a few items of utmost importance regarding the space shuttle. The shuttle Challenger went down January the 28th. It was a Tuesday, so my broadcast waited 6 days. We couldn't push the week ahead. And the very first item I had on the space shuttle to discuss on the air was Ronald Reagan's ordering that shuttle to go. And it had to get off that day, hot or cold, because he was going to talk about Christa McAuliffe. And that still is the sore point of this investigation. And it goes down to the factor that these pieces of machinery can't and don't work in this cold weather, that this was a precedent that had never been set before. It was the coldest that they ever launched. They had known since 1982, 1984, 1985, the damage that the cold would do, how the engineers were forced to change and sign a piece of paper against their wishes, that the engineers always were the ones that had to prove it was safe, and the decision was left to them. And then the cold has been a factor, and the pressure on them has been a factor. And as I said before, the fact that they had no contingencies is impossible, that they just simply fell apart. If one shuttle goes, all of them goes. And the fact that there's such a busy business schedule doesn't make sense. If you need those four and you can't make 14 shuttles in a year, you can only make 8 or 10, you're sure not going to jeopardize one of the four and make sure that you can't make any. Didn't make sense at all, except that it was undue pressure. Now, the New York Times had an article March the 13th. NASA urged Reagan to make a speech about the space shuttle with the teacher on it. It was on their mind, and this is the story that the space agency officials recommended in early January, that Reagan take note in his State of the Union message that the shuttle voyage of the New Hampshire school teacher, the White House officials said today, was mentioned. And the reason they wanted to talk about her was to hide the military part of the space program and make it look like it is a domestic national interest of ours, not international warfare or first strike capability, but that civilians are very much involved in the program. The administration, of course, Larry Speake said that they never followed through, that the president pushed this aside and didn't consider this. And Pat Buchanan, who oversees the speeches, said it was a routine sweep of 18 agencies. I don't believe it at all, because they won't turn over their logs, and they spent 5 hours erasing any chance. That's where the missing part is, the missing tape, that five-hour lapse. So you're not going to find it anymore, as I said, in the Watergate tapes I mentioned before. Now, Dr. William Graham's name appeared on this request, of course, and he was just new to the agency. He was brought in just prior to the time that the launch was going to go down, and he's asking the president to talk about it. And the New York Times says, according to Mr. Thomas Buchanan, the only mention of the Challenger flight, the text that Mr. Reagan was to deliver on January 28th, was a passing comment on an experiment prepared by a college student that would be conducted in flight. Now, if you're going to talk about the college student, you're going to talk about the teacher, because he used this to get teachers' votes at the last election and brought it up very quickly. And Mr. Buchanan's the same one that says that there's no Waffen SS buried at the cemetery at Bitburg, and urged the president to go. And then the president is photographed around all the Waffen SS graves, and that picture hangs in the White House halls right now. The story in the New York Times is quite clear that the NASA recommendation was discovered just earlier this week when a congressional committee asked if such a document existed. They weren't aware of that yet, even though it's been on radio talk shows from the time the shuttle went, you can say, went up or down, whichever way you want to figure it. And the official didn't know why the recommendation was not passed on, but Richard Nixon told you he never saw the men who were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. The space agency's proposal, according to the New York Times, said, "Tonight, while I'm speaking to you, a young elementary school teacher from Concord, New Hampshire, is taking us on the ultimate field trip as she orbits the Earth as the first citizen passenger on the space shuttle," which is untrue again. There were congressmen and people from other countries. They were civilians and doctors and scientists. That was BS. But the budget was coming up the next week, and they needed to escalate the space money, which documents approved in the last 2 weeks. They were absolutely throwing down the sewer, the drain pipes, wasting the money, and pushing the Star Wars in that new space plane, which this week I read they're already starting the funding requesting for. So he was to talk about Krista McAuliffe's journey is a prelude to the journeys of other Americans living and working together in a permanently manned space station by the mid-1990s. Now, this week, they are asking for $800 billion for the space station to Mars, the going off to Mars for civilians, which they say is a one-way trip, exactly alternative three. And I said when the shuttle went down, they'd begin pushing the Mars money, $800 billion. And they can't clean up the pollution in this country and get things straight, the priorities around. Mrs. McAuliffe's work in space, he was to say, is just one of the achievements in space that we have planned for the coming years. You can believe that. Now, this was the recommendation was January the 8th, and it said on the note that her flight, Mrs. McAuliffe's flight, is scheduled January 24th through 29th, and the speech was the 28th. The New York Times, March 13th, has that. Los Angeles Herald had an article April the 4th. White House was in contact with NASA prior to the launch. This comes from Santa Barbara, the New York Times. The White House said yesterday that several of Reagan's aides were in telephone contact with the space agency before the launch, but there was no evidence there was any pressure. Now, how can you believe any of that? These same people, William Casey and Fred Fielding and all of them, work for Watergate. How do you believe these denials are part of the CIA? You have a denial ready, so that's part of the operation. You don't do anything unless you have a denial, and they can lie through their teeth. White House spokesman Larry Speaks acknowledged the telephone conversations, but he said the administration was declining to release the telephone records and logs that were requested in connection with the Senate investigation. Speaks said that 9 White House staff members telephoned NASA in the 8 days before the launch. Well, the Saturday they were supposed to go and didn't go, they might have called that day on the 25th and said, is it dusty? On Sunday was, as I say, the Super Bowl. They may have wanted to put it off because of the competition of the media between the teacher and the budget coming up the following week for space, or that evening he was going to ask and give his presentation. It wasn't even the week. That was put off because of the death. He was to ask that very night about that fast airplane that all of us will take to Japan, probably never see, and the Star Wars and the space money and so forth, the warfare state speech. So there were 9 telephone conversations 8 days before, but the evening of the 27th and the 28th, there could have been 3 each of those, but 9 called, but we're not going to let you have them. And they said they had no recollection or indication they were related to the launch. They just say, hello, how are you, and so forth. The Houston Post had an article March 21st. Representative Hollings, Ernest Hollings, stalks the presidential aides. And this goes into the fact, and this story broke, pushing the issues around, that he demanded the telephone logs of 9 presidential assistants, and they had to admit that those people were in touch with them. Hollings wrote to White House counsel Fred Fielding. Fielding has retired. The Donovan trial, Raymond Donovan, Secretary of Labor, is about to begin soon. Fred Fielding is getting out. He has strong links to all kinds of chicanery through the entire Richard Nixon Watergate affair. Why write to Fred Fielding, except William Rogers and Fielding are very close, so it's ridiculous for Hollings to write to Fielding. And he asked on the Senate floor for the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. We're being stonewalled by the committee's Republican majority in the Senate. And he asked, please, to open this up, that there were rumors that Ronald Reagan in the State of the Union message was going to talk about Ms. McAuliffe. And the NASA headquarters at the Kennedy Space Center and Johnson Space Center have been requested to turn over their phone logs to Senator Hollings. But the Senate is stopping him, the Republicans. It's become a Republican versus Democrat, which I mentioned before, because Reagan would be out of office. I should think something would knock him out of office. I don't know what it's going to take. But Senator Hollings' office is missing a certain point. They've asked NASA headquarters, that's the Johnson headquarters in Houston, Texas. They've asked the Kennedy Space Center for this information. And the key is Huntsville, Alabama, and Rockwell's offices at Downey, California. Those are the areas that are important to get the people down in Huntsville, who are, of course, deeply involved and pressured, and then didn't feel they had the necessity to pass on to the top team, but the top knew anyway. And the representative for Rockwell International is none other than Michael Deaver, whose last big bash for Ronald Reagan was the Bitburg ceremony. He's very close to Nancy Reagan. He's the representative, the public relations representative for Rockwell. So they're not pressuring Rockwell to come out with the information. Now, The Guardian, a small newspaper, many of you know it, March 19th, their last issue, the one before, has an article, The Free World's Most Vicious Rumor, a very good article sent to me by a World Watcher. And the article goes like this. Reagan administration is stonewalling the question. They have not answered, and the denials have been undermined by a widening credibility gap. The Harris poll, even that, a strong, staunch Republican group, feels the people have not much confidence in the presidential commission. The majority don't have confidence. The Roger Commission refused to take even the most uncritical questions about the White House. The Rogers Commission was appointed February the 3rd, and they refused to examine the telephone logs or otherwise the documents from the White House preceding the launch, and this cast doubt on the character and the accuracy of the people involved. This article goes on. There's a lack of authority of the Rogers Commission to issue subpoenas, and of course William Rogers, who shares law offices, Rogers and Wells, with William Casey of the CIA, Rogers has been linked to the mafia, an excellent article I keep wanting to get into in case you don't have it, from Sundance Magazine. His links to Richard Nixon and the Hughes Organization in the Bahamas. William Rogers, who was an attorney representing the Greek military junta, the Nazis. A friend just sent me a section out of a book of his role with that. And Rogers also worked closely with the drug enforcement team, the White House plumbers. And in the book Spooks, on page 143, a section called Assassination Incorporated. It talks about a cabinet committee with John Mitchell, John Connally from Permandex, Secretary of Defense Melvin Laird, Secretary of State William Rogers, and CIA Director William Helms. And Connally and Mitchell were indicted later for their Watergate crimes, but the working staff was Egil Crow, G. Gordon Liddy, E. Howard Hunt, later went to jail. They were all part of the Watergate team, and William Rogers' law office was always entwined with those people, so you can't expect much from them. The Guardian article says Senator Ernest Hollings asked who in the White House was in contact with Canaveral, how were they in contact, what method did they contact, and who were they talking to. Now, this article makes up a list of two names, and then the next week, The Guardian added a third name of the highest-level government officials in the intelligence, national security, and CIA, working with William Rogers on the whole space story. What they're trying to do is to save the presidency, like they did or tried to do at the time of Watergate. When they couldn't save Richard Nixon, they brought in Gerald Ford from the Warren Commission with Nelson Rockefeller as vice president. And I bring this up because the Rogers Commission has been stacked right from the very beginning. The Guardian brings out the names of these three people. First of all, they said the White House and the executive branch dominate the entire Rogers Commission, whereas the investigation to organized crime or the Three Mile Island, the investigation of the nuclear mishap had not objective people, but separated from the White House. Alton Keel, A-L-T-O-N-K-E-E-L, is the staff chief, brought in as the chief of the Rogers Commission. This article says he took leave from his job as associate director for the National Security and International Affairs on the Office of Management and Budget. He's at OMB in charge of White House oversights for the budget of State Department, CIA, Pentagon, and National Security Agency, which of course would be the Star Wars, the space shuttle, the takeover of the military, moving the civilians out of the space program as far as you can. The second person on the staff that they cite is Thomas Reinhardt. Well, they actually have three names, of the Rogers Commission. He's the second-ranking official under Mr. Keel in OMB, who worked for the CIA, the National Security Council, and so forth. Reinhardt explained that Keel, he's the spokesman, took charge of the Rogers Commission at the request of the president. The president wanted Keel in there, the president who was going to mention Krista in his speech. The third person they refer to as a Max Weinberg, because you see these names in the news regarding press conferences, Max Weinberg. The commission chief spokesman is on leave from the White House press office under Larry Speaks, and of course that is Thomas Buchanan. And Anne Brackville, White House spokeswoman, explained that Mr. Weinberg, right from the White House press office, has temporary work on the Rogers Commission, but that doesn't affect his relationship between the White House and the Rogers Commission. His word, in quotes, is our word. So he goes back and forth with Alton Keel to the White House, one from the OMB, National Security Council, CIA, and Pentagon and State Department, the other right from the White House with Larry Speaks or Larry Lies, and the Thomas Buchanan outfit in the White House. And the article says Weinberg's dual responsibilities are with A, the White House, B, the Rogers Commission. And Weinberg was asked who in the White House was in touch with NASA before the launch. And he got angry and he said that is the most irresponsible rumor in the history of the presidency, the most vicious rumor in the free world. That's the title of this article. The most irresponsible rumor and the most vicious in the free world. What about the unfree world? And then the Guardian says that Weinberger and Brackville have repeatedly refused to comply to questions about the White House contact with NASA by angrily denying that Reagan wanted to refer to the shuttle program in his State of the Union message. So Mike Royke is still asking in the Chicago Tribune, they quote him, that wanting to find out about the speech, and that he published an article saying that there is no way, absolutely no way, it's completely out of the question. The White House told him to get a copy of the speech. And the article in The Guardian says there's new evidence of outside pressure to get the Challenger launched, that this keeps coming up, that the NASA manager at Kennedy Space Center said, we made a bad call when we said the Challenger was to go, but there was something weird going on here that night. Right from the beginning, we always erred on the side of safety. And this is a quotation, and Representative Edward Markey is trying to help Senator Hollings find out what went on. Now, The Guardian had another article on this March 26th, and they updated some of that material about Weinberger and the fact that William Graham was said he urged the Reagan administration of the commitment to a strong civilian program, that on the national television the night of his speech, he should be urging publicly this strong civilian space program, where you saw the next two shuttles would go up with the plutonium, and they knew it was dangerous, they knew the ship could crack, but get behind the teachers' petticoats and let's get going. And this next article refers not only to Mark Weinberger, I've given his background, but the Rogers Commission's two spokesmen for the Rogers Commission. One is Mr. Weinberger, and the other is Herbert Hetu, H-E-T-U. That's a new name in this matter. Hetu refused to speak to the newspapers, and it goes on that Hetu is part of the Central Intelligence Agency. Among the commission's perception managers, and they call them perception managers, how you see the event is what happened. They have this term, perception manager. Among the commission's perception managers is assistant spokesman Mr. Hetu, who served as chief spokesman for the Central Intelligence Agency until 1981. Among other links with the CIA is Staff Director Alton Keel, who's on leave from overseeing the CIA budget for White House, in addition to CIA Director William Casey and Commission Chairman William Rogers, who was partner in the law firm of Rogers and Wells. Prior to Casey taking over the CIA, Rogers had a close connection with the CIA, at least in 1984 when he was Deputy Attorney General, and he approved the secret agreement between the Justice Department and the CIA that gave the agency complete authority for investigating illegal acts by CIA employees, and for 20 years they managed this kind of work. This is the team in charge of the Shuttle Challenger investigation and what they call Perception Manager. The article says the Rogers Commission refusal to investigate the politically inspired aspects of the Challenger schedule is beginning to cause public concern. In a telephone interview, the Federation of American Scientists President John Pike remarked, "One of the principal jobs of this commission, as I say, is perception manager." And that is a good word for it. The Daily World, March 1st, has a story, "Did White House force the shuttle takeoff?" And in the newspaper yesterday, it's indicated from the Chicago Tribune and the San Francisco Examiner, April the 6th, NASA fly-by-night procedures shock the space shuttle panelists. A quotation, "Nothing in this program was coordinated with anything else," and it tells about what a rotten system it was, how nobody paid attention to each other, how they ignored each other, and the astronauts told about one horror story after the other. It was televised last week. You might have seen it. But that was April the 6th. On April the 7th, 1986, this morning's news, again by John Noble Wilford from the New York Times, U.S. moves towards shuttle successor. Now, John Noble Wilford is the fellow who wrote the article on the spaceship Challenger, this very one that was going to be turning the space program into military. He wrote it for the New York Times just within 3 weeks of after the Korean airline went down when the Challenger was monitoring it. Again, with Mr. Truly, Richard Truly, who became the director of the shuttle program now. He's Admiral Truly, ran the Challenger circling Russia and the islands when the House of Representatives, Larry McDonald, the John Birch Society was dunked. The Challenger was used then. And John Noble Wilford is the writer for Space Things, the New York Times. One week after all the hearings and the public hearings, goodness knows what went on, the president's ready to give money to the same people to improve the machinery. As I said before, they know what they want, and to get on with the story as if nothing happened. It's like Korea didn't happen, Vietnam didn't happen, Iran and Mossadegh and the Shah didn't happen, Klaus Barbie and the Nazis and the death teams in South America didn't happen. The survivors, of course, are under the Hughes Organization, the Medical Institute, the Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger. That's why those people are so important. They get anything they want, and they are altering us physically, biologically, through food, through atmosphere, through disease. And if we don't stop these people and go back to their specific origins and the power they've had, they will continue to do more. This shuttle didn't mean a thing to them. It didn't mean a thing to Rockwell or to Huntsville. Nobody will be punished except to switch jobs. They won't be identifiable. Now, one of the most shocking stories of the shuttle program is in the Washington Post, March 16th, 1986, "Why I Blew the Whistle on NASA's O-Ring." And this is by Richard Cook. "When the Rogers Commission had their first public hearings to show you, look, we're squeaky clean, see us, we're scientists, we're astronauts, we wouldn't hurt a fly, I'm the vice president of Boeing or the president of Boeing aircraft, we are wonderful people, and we're going to find out how seven people died and all these billions of dollars were thrown in the ocean, trust us." And after those couple of days, Richard Cook was furious that they were lying, and he said, "This is why I blew the whistle on the NASA's O-rings." Now, part of this article, and it's a whole long, it's almost the whole page of the newspaper, but in the middle of it, he tells you, and I'll get to the beginning, but I like to get sometimes to the middle first, you know how I work. There's a section called the Death Document, and the whole article is about how they knew this was going to happen. And he tells how when he was at NASA, one person at NASA told him, step away from the door, because he was searching for another document in the filing cabinet, and he didn't want to see anyone in his office and later be suspected that he was the one that was caught or had gotten it. and he called it the death document. He said that meant if the contents were known, it would prove without any doubt that NASA was aware of the potentially disastrous problem with the seals for over 3 years. And Mr. Cook is saying, I'm going to tell you about this because they know it. He says another person told him of his fear that if the truth came out about those O-rings, it would be the little guys who would be fried. Well, seven were fried, and little guys aren't yet fried, but they'll continue with their jobs because what they know, and if they can sanitize that, you can imagine they can sanitize the White House logs. He said in summer of 1985, and many of you know that, he had concern for the solid rocket booster that was used in the shuttle and its history, what he said about it being catastrophic. And in this article, he said the engineers knew the O-rings were potentially deadly. They held their breath every time they went up. There were clear warnings that were discounted by the bureaucracy, the same bureaucracy that's going to get $3 billion to make another ship. If there's unemployment, Congress, go into your debt, give us a $3 billion and close all the American farms. This would save every farm that's being foreclosed if we would stop that Ford shuttle and give it to the farmer. The article goes on, the NASA bureaucratic team were unable to accept any serious nature of problems, and they didn't want to be fully informed of them. The mid-level managers didn't pass it on. And I use the example of a nice man, a decent man, like Leon Panetta here, who doesn't want to be informed on what's going to the country. I see it right in my own neighborhood, 2 miles down from my house. Passes by the house every time he gets to get to his home, just about, or to his office. But people don't want to be informed. Mr. Cook said February the 3rd, 1986, after the shuttle went down, there was a report from Marshall, Alabama, the Huntsville people, the Marshall Space Center, that they were not adequately responsive to headquarters' concern about flight safety. And they claimed there wasn't enough time for assessment of problems, and the engineers were improperly excluded from the investigation of the Challenger disaster because that proved to be a lie. And he said the purpose of this report is to show that I did write a report saying that improvements had to be made, that the organization milieu around the O-ring had to be corrected. Now, James Beggs came in from General Dynamics. He cites that. He came in 1981, right after Reagan was inaugurated. The Space Center was changed. He said it will be micromanaged away from headquarters, and there will be little central guidance or control. Beggs is under indictment for millions of dollars taken from General Dynamics. He broke it up in 1981. Now, this is 83's when the Star Wars speech is going to be put in, and Edward Teller and Reagan, these people have cooked up this Star Wars since the 60s, since the 40s, since 1945. And now it is time to move to the next stage. He said there was lack of central authority in Marshall Center in Huntsville. The officials from there in particular were defensive. They are vague. They brushed aside concerns raised by the headquarters. They didn't care about. They were indifferent to the budget costs. The solid rocket booster office was downplayed regarding the safety raised by Marshall's own engineers and their own science and lab. So remember the second broadcast right after this went down, and I said, look, this was meant to go down. He said the promotion system was for yes man, whoever agreed and stayed cool and thought like the management stayed, and the others were sure to leave, and they were moved out. They said, we want positive talk. And then the article goes on to say that the filament around the case, the solid rocket booster, ruptured. And they knew that this was a big problem. The budget didn't support the improving of it. They knew it would be catastrophic. They didn't want to put money in. And in the hearings in February, when the Rogers Commission was going, and he heard what they were saying, they gave the impression they never saw the O-ring as a flight safety problem. They saw no problem. And that's when Richard Cook got very angry. If I run out of time, I may go back to some more of this, but if you get to a library and get the Washington Post story and copy it, I won't have to use so much airtime for you to get it. If you don't have a library that has it, I'll update a little more for the next few minutes. He said that the Marshall people in Huntsville and at the headquarters discounted the engineers' concerns. They decided in 1985 that the flights would continue in the face of known problems with solid rocket booster problems. and the testimony before the Rogers Commission, they were almost proud, he said. They could claim not to have been overly concerned, not to have been informed, and their justification that made him mad. Richard Cook was mad that they got up there and were proud of their decision to fly, that they wouldn't admit that there were major problems, that they knew about the problem. They didn't think they were serious, and after it blew up, they didn't think they were serious, and they'd probably do the same thing again. And it was the impact of their indifference, their attitude that there was no problem, the attitude everything okay will happen, the attitude if we have more money, we wouldn't have so many problems, and their attitude, well, so what, space could be dangerous. Those were the things that Richard Cook was seeing and hearing. And that's when he decided to blow the story. And the Washington Post, as I say, has this thing on the death document and what they knew, which just confirms that broadcast I had the second week after the shuttle, that it was meant to go, they wanted it to go, and that space would belong to the Star Wars people. Our time is up now. I had a lot more I wanted to share with you, but I think we have enough material for this week, and whatever we don't have time for this week, I will continue as I try to do. But these are terrible times because those people are crazy. And again, the Nazi, NASA, von Braun, Dornberger, Huntsville people go back to the Kennedy assassination, which is where I began my studies. And that's why it's so important to go back to that era and see where they're leading us today. In the meantime, we are out of the hour. This is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week. Thanks for the books and the articles.